Hey friends, welcome back for season two of the Coming Up Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Schumacher. If you caught season one, thanks for tuning in. If this is your first time listening, welcome. It's good to be back. A whole new slate of wonderful guests for the summer of 2021. We've already got the first few lined up in the hopper. I'm psyched. And we're starting season two with a guest I'm really excited about. John Mosley, the head coach of the East Los Angeles College men's basketball team, and my favorite person from the most recent season of the Netflix documentary, Last Chance U. If you've never seen Last Chance U, I highly recommend. It is binge-worthy Netflix at its finest. My wife and I watched all of it in less than a week. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I think there's about five seasons. And this season with Coach Mosley and his basketball team out in East LA was hands down my favorite season of the show, mainly because of Coach Mosley. I was just drawn to his energy, inspired by his faith and his passion for coaching and mentoring the student athletes on his team. He cared. You could tell he loved these kids, and it made me love the kids too. He's just so authentically himself, and that shines through throughout the course of our 30 plus minutes conversing about a plethora of topics. Of course, we talk about the show and having the Netflix crew around and in the locker room. We talk about the aftermath of the show, which has kept Coach Mosley very busy, full of interviews like this one. And we also talk about his coaching influences and, most importantly, his faith. So here we go. It is episode one of season two of the Coming Up Podcast with Last Chance U's Coach John Mosley. I guess the first thing is, you know, when I was digging to see if you guys had played this year, I didn't see any results. Have you played? Have you practiced? What's the deal since we last saw you guys on the Netflix documentary?
Yeah, so it's, what do we got here? May 20th? Yeah, I still haven't been in the gym since March 10th or something of 2020. So, yeah, it's we're here in Los Angeles County, which is probably the strictest in terms of a progressive area. We've been the strictest in regards to getting back. So it's kind of where we're at. So all the young men that we've tried to serve, man, it's been tough to kind of get to them. And that's been the toughest part, all the other stuff has been great, but family's been great. That's been probably the best part. So I'll take that. It's kind of a wash. Well, it's not a wash. Actually, spending time with family has been, and spending time with my children and pouring into them has been able to, been giving me great joy. But at the same time, no, we haven't been in. We didn't have a season. I thought we could have. I thought we were in position to return safely, and we had all the protocols in place. But it just never happened. Leadership just never made the call to do it. So it's kind of where we're at. So.
So what the heck have you been doing as a basketball coach, not able to coach, not even
practice? I've been doing this. So it's given me time to reach out. And I actually, my son had a little team and a couple of his friends. I coached them and my daughter. So all my kids play sports. I've been able to kind of spend time with them. I've carved out time to kind of do this. I still teach online a full load. Mm-hmm. So that's taking up time. But, you know, it still is interesting, man. You still never have enough hours in the day, you know. Everything kind of – it's amazing. I'm sitting at home and I still don't have enough time, you know.
Well, Coach, that's part of what I wanted to ask you about. Before we kind of jump into the show itself and your journey as a coach, has it been weird for you having all the – out of the blue? You know, like 2 years ago, you're doing your thing at a community college, just coaching kids, not a whole lot of publicity outside of your community. And now all of a sudden – you know, you've got to have a calendar where people come in and request to interview you and talk to you. What's that been like?
Yeah, that part has been, originally the show happens in Netflix. They're scheduling all these meetings for me. And then they were, which I'm kind of, you know, humbled by, they said, we've never had more than, you know, have to schedule for you more than a month and a half after. And so still there's those that want to reach out, and I'm just like, hey, I got the time to do it. I'll tell you what, if I didn't, I just feel a sense of responsibility to try to reach as many people if they want to talk to me. I mean, who am I not to talk to somebody? Like, you know, I feel a sense of responsibility to reach out to as many as I can. So it's something that I've kind of always done, just not on this scale. Like somebody calls me, I try to call them back. And if somebody wants some, you know, come me do a clinic or something, I'll do it. But just not on this scale. But since the pandemic, I've said, okay, I'll carve out time in the mornings where I can do it. And then the rest of the day I can, you know, do things what I need to do with my kids and teach my classes. So it's been different. I've been surprised, a little bit saddened by the conversations in the sense that, you know, everybody's saying, hey, you've done a great job. And they're kind of celebrating me. And I'm like, man, I shouldn't be celebrated. This is what we should be doing. You know, this is how we should be living out in terms of helping others and all that. And you know, the conversation I'm having is, it's almost like it's not normal. And I'm like, no, this should be normal. And so it's kind of that the part that saddens me. It's like, why does this seem like this? I'm doing, you know, I appreciate, you know, those saying, hey, great job, but isn't this going on more? Like, you know, the coaches in the next gym. And so that's kind of where, you know, other than the fact that, yeah, this has been great, the exposure. I mean, we're talking about worldwide, man. I didn't realize, I'm talking about countries are reaching out all over the states of the United States, from almost every state I've heard from. So in terms of emails, thousands of emails, thousands of young men want to come play here now. So, yeah, it's been a bunch, man. We're trying to sort through it. And I'm literally saying, I'm going to try to reach everybody. I don't know about the DMs now. You know, I tried to do that. I never had social media. I had Twitter, but I've never sent out a tweet until February or March. I've never had Instagram. And now I got thousands of followers on that. And so I never wanted to do it, but hey, I'm doing it's kind of changing that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really interesting point you bring up about how you have this sense of feeling like, hey, hang on a second. Why am I getting all this praise for something that I feel like should be going on more commonly? And I want to get into that a little bit more as we go throughout this show. But first of all, I know you watched the show because I was reading an article where you kind of talked about that. When did you watch the show? Did you watch it before it got published, or did you watch it like the rest of us on Netflix?
No, so they gave it to me a week before. So I was able to watch it a week before.
Did you binge it all at once?
Yeah, me and the family did it too. I think I got it. Yeah, here's the thing. I got the link for it like at 6 p.m. time. And then we didn't have time as a family to sit down until like 10 or 11, right? They all had school the next day, but we started watching it, half of it. We binged half of it at about 11 o'clock at night to like 3 a.m. Like 50 minutes. So we were able to get about four or five episodes in till 3 a.m. All the kids went to bed. We woke up the next day. Everybody did Zoom everybody did school on Zoom. And then later on that evening, everybody's like, no, nobody watches. So the wife, when she came home, again, we started at 6. And we watched the rest of it. So it took us 2 days to watch it. And we watched it and we were like, wow. And we were so tempted to leak it to different friends. And, you know, a few people we gave the code to watch it. And I was like, just make sure you lose my code, because it was like, you know, they gave us a preview code and we leaked it too. But for the most part, we didn't give it out too much. And we didn't let too many people know we saw it. Because then everybody would have wanted to grab it. But yeah, we got a chance to see it ahead of time. I was really nervous. I wanted to see how awful I was going to be. So I just wanted to check it out and see how bad it was going to be, you know? Because I didn't think it was going to be entertaining. I was like, there's no way I can be as entertaining as those other guys. And I mean, they did a great job of how they cut it up and the music and just everything, you know?
What was most surprising to you when you watched the season back?
You know what? I thought the comments, the guys, you know, because I hear all the other crap. So some of the good stuff that the guys had to say about me, you know, usually the players don't have anything good to say until they get their bachelor's degree, you know, and they got kids, mm-hmm. you know, and then they come sit behind a bench with their arms crossed and they say, "Coach, these guys aren't listening to you." And I say, "Man, you didn't listen to me 5 years ago," you know, but I thought that was touching to see, you know, those guys had, and I know, you know, like those, the things that, if they said anything negative, that's the life of a coach, right? They don't appreciate anything that you're trying to instill or tell them until years later. But for them to write during, I mean, they're filming this during the season.
Right.
For them to have some good things to say while I'm cursing them out or while I'm telling them off. For them to feel compelled to say, they appreciated what I did. I thought that was great.
Coach, I was reading in, I think it was Esquire magazine, some interview you did where you actually talked about that it was the pastor of your church who convinced you to accept Greg Whiteley's invitation to have your season filmed, right?
Yeah. So I'm like, well, first of all, I didn't know the magnitude of it, kind of, you know. Sometimes innocence it can be better, you know. The ignorance is sometimes better. Like, I had no idea the show was this big. When they reached out to me, it was a cold call. And I'm like, yeah, I kind of heard of it. It's like a football show, but I don't really watch TV anyway. I really don't. I just watch sports, and that's it. I don't watch TV or do any of that. Well, since the pandemic, I binged everything. You know, I can tell you quote for quote, quote, every Office episode now. Like, you know, I binged everything. But before, I haven't. But he said, you know, they reached out to me, and I was like, oh, no, I'm not doing that. Like, my life is perfect. I'm older now. If you called me in my 20s, heck yeah, I would have did it, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm, like, older, man. I don't need all that now. I got a 10-year position. My kids are doing well. I've learned how to live life without recognition, without being on this stage. I've learned how to be fulfilled without feeling the need to be seen or anybody to give me any recognition. And so I've kind of, what's crazy is as God has gotten me past that. And then now all of a sudden here it all comes. And it's like, wait a minute, I've gotten past it. I'm comfortable in my own skin. I'm comfortable with me now. I don't need anybody to celebrate me. I don't need any recognition. And now all of a sudden here comes this opportunity to be this, you know, on this stage. And I'm like, nah, I don't want to do that now. It's too late. You guys should have called me when I was 18, man. I needed that attention at 18. And so now I'm with a friend of mine. We're in Dallas. And mind you, all the other friends of mine, are a lot of friends that weren't believed. They were like, no, man, don't do that. You'll get fired. They're going to see something crazy and you'll get fired. Friend of mine who's a good man of faith as well, a coach, he mentioned we were at a showcase and our players were there. So we're watching our players play in the showcase. And I said, hey, man, let me tell you something. Don't tell anybody, but I think this show wants to do this. What do you think? I got to tell them here like in a week. He said, oh, man, absolutely. You got to do it. You got to share what young, you know, what you're doing and the impact that you're having. And I'm still not bought in. And I say, all right, I'm going to call my pastor. He's going to tell me that, no, we need to make sure in the body of Christ, we just stay focused on pleasing God and God will elevate us. And let's just be humble about the work we do, you know. But to my surprise, man, he tells me, like, no, man, you predestined. And I'm thinking, like, but what about all these shows where people of faith, they go on there and all of a sudden the cameras come and they lose their faith. They're like, God looks bad all of a sudden. I don't want to be that guy where here I am, a person, I'm saying I'm a person of faith, and all of a sudden I'm doing all this cursing, swearing, and I'm flirting, and I'm doing all this crazy stuff. And they're like, wait a minute, is that what, you know, because that's what turns, it's people that turn people away from faith and religion. It's us, the way we act, because they're looking at our lives and we turn them away. And so I said, man, God, I don't want to be that person. And my pastor said, no, John, you actually are sincere and you try to live it out the right way. So I think you'll be fine. And by the way, if a door closes that they decide to get rid of you, God will open up another door. And so ultimately I just says, wow, he says yes. So I guess it's, you know, that kind of, you know, puts it there. And mm-hmm. so I kind of went along with it. But, yeah, I wasn't sold and didn't realize the impact that it would have. And, you know, I'm kind of humbled that I'm a part of it and that it did have some impact. You know, I wanted just to see, like, just do right and help people. And at the same time, you can win games and you cannot curse and you can try to – you can coach them hard, but you can still love them and – you know, and it wasn't a show or act. It's something that I've tried to do it the right way. And I think the players respect me a little bit more and they'll buy in a little bit more if they can see an example that's lived out, you know, rather than a tyrant saying, do what I say, you know, just see an example lived out and they see the sincerity of where I'm trying to direct them, the authenticity and the true care for them. And I think they follow that a little bit. You know, I found that to be, you know, how I get them to follow me, you know.
Well, we've only been talking for 15 minutes, and I feel like you are exactly how you were on the show, which I love. And for me, you know, this has been my favorite season of Last Chance U. It's why I reached out to you. You know, the path, the passion with which you coach, the way your faith influences your coaching, that was most inspiring to my wife and I. We found ourselves really, I think I told you this when I reached out to you, we found ourselves like identifying with the journey of your program and with, you know, the way that you were trying to coach your players. And I'm curious, Coach, you know, obviously faith is the biggest part of your life. What's your story? How did you come to your faith in the Lord?
Well, you know what? I think if you're talking about that specific moment, of course, I was fortunate enough, right, to grow up in the church. So
okay.
I was fortunate enough. I had a mom and dad at home. So, yeah, I grew up around the gutter and kind of was in the gutter. But I at least when I walked through the doors of my house, there was a little bit of there was some stability, right? When I stepped outside the doors of my home, there was so much instability. I still had a choice to make, but fortunately, when I walked in the doors of my home, there was some stability and I saw some examples. So that helped me. But, you know, grew up in the church. I'm walking home from school and literally got a gun put on me. And the guys asked me about my, I had the seeds planted in me. And they asked me, hey, I had the Jordan number twos or number back in the days. What was that, 1990? Might have been 90. It was like 87 or 86 or something like that. Whatever Jordans was out then, I was wearing them. And they said, hey, where are you from? Basically, they would ask me, where are you from? Which means, what gang am I from? And I'm walking home from school. This is after I went through my gang bout, you know. Mm-hmm. And now I'm a basketball player in high school. And I got these Jordans on. They asked me, where are you from? And then I said, man, I'm not from anywhere. I play ball. They see I have the ball. They see I look like a basketball player. They say, okay, what size shoe you wear? That doesn't mean they want to know what size shoe I wear. They let me know we're about to take your shoes, the Jordans, right? And at the time, those Jordans cost $105 in 1980.
Yeah,
that was a lot of money. That was like how they cost now. What, they're like $200-something now? It was like $105, and my aunt had bought them for me for my birthday. And then I'm literally looking and I'm just so tired. I'm tired of this. Like, I'm tired of feeling out of control. I'm tired of feeling like anything can happen to me at any moment. I'm tired of feeling so vulnerable. And then a lady, you know, my house is 5 minutes from my high school, walking distance. One of the neighbors says, they called me John John when I was younger. Hey, John John, are you okay? You all right? Basically, she's saying, are they bothering you? And, you know, there's kind of a written rule. You got the old, you know, lady on the block. You kind of don't mess with her, you know, for whatever reasons. I mean, she's just an old lady who's a neighbor, and the gangbangers are scared of her, but they're not scared of me, who's young and, you know, and can probably fight, but they're scared of her. And then they kind of squashed the conversation, and I kind of walked home kind of crying, like, and then I went in my room and I prayed. Of course, all these seeds have been planted in my life, all the pouring in my life, but I prayed. And from that point on, there was a level of conviction that's come over me. But what has happened is throughout that, there was a level of conviction, but I went to a Christian college. I went to the master's college at the time. It's the master's university. I started to see people living out their life and living out their faith in their walk. And I'm like, man, they really are living like Christians. And they're my age. They're really not partying like that. They're really not, you know, you mean, tell me you, wait, you're a Christian and you're really not having sex? And so I'm really watching this and I'm like, wow, they're living it out. And I started to see that I'm around people and they're influencing me to live out my life the same way. Right? But then really changed is I go on this mission trip. At the end of my, you know, I went to community college and then 2 years there. At the end of my, years. Now, mind you, my only reason for going on the mission trip is to play pro basketball. Like it was like, hey, come on the mission trip. And what it was is we were playing basketball against some pro teams. And then at halftime, we'll share our faith. We'll finish the game. You know, throughout the week, we'll go to and do clinics in the small villages or communities, basketball clinics and camps. We were partnered with Athletes in Action. Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, with our college. So our basketball team went, the men's and women's basketball team, the men's and women's soccer team. So we're doing camps and clinics like that. My whole purpose was to go and play pro ball, but God's purpose was totally different. So as we share in our faith, we ministering. One thing that happened was when I shared my faith, I didn't think I had a ministry. But when I shared it, because everybody has these perfect testimonies, like it was like a perfect way to share your testimony. It was like an outline of how you share your faith, right? But then when I shared mine, I kind of came from my heart, because a lot of those kids, they come from a place that I come from, like they really are from the hood in Brazil. And so it kind of, there was a connection. But then what happened when everybody left, my buddy's there, he's the only guy, he's from Brazil, we played together at college, but he stays home as well. He's there, he said, okay, now, since you finished the mission trip, I'm gonna help you find a team. So I'm the only one there. Everybody else goes back to the States. But what happened is, I just got my Bible and my devotion book, right? What happened is I do my normal devotions in the morning and yes, Lord, thank you, Lord, you know. But what happened is there's nothing else to do but wake up, do my devotions, and then work out and play basketball. It's not like normal. I don't understand anything on television. What happened is my 45-minute, you know, my 45-minute devotion goes from 45 minutes to an hour. To an hour, to an hour and a half, to an hour and a half, to 2 hours in the morning. But let me return to what I was reading. All of a sudden, I'm enlightening, and I go and I'm in the evening. So, yeah, my day is carved out, and I go do the basketball stuff, but I come back. Now, all of a sudden, I got this crazy hunger to go back and read what I was being enlightened about. Now, mind you, I get a degree in theology, because you're at the Christian college, you got to take a certain amount of units in theology. Mind you, I know all this stuff, but I didn't know Yahweh. I didn't know God. Like, I didn't know all the way. I was saved, right? I was convicted, but I didn't know who he was. I knew the history of God because I had to take these Bible classes. But when you have to sit there and you're isolated and God consecrates you, and now I'm in the Word of God from, it goes from 45 minutes for a day to 6 hours for weeks. And it was like, I was in awe. And now from that day forward, or that time period now, I know so much, or I know enough. I don't know so much. I know enough to be in complete humility, complete embarrassment of who I am, complete wretched man that I am. I'm awful as a human being. I am in complete, in reverence to how great God is. And I just came back from Brazil with a level of humility. And like, I just got to serve. It is no longer about me. And yeah, I played a little bit more. I went in Australia and played, but God took away the desire. Then my heart changed to kind of serve from that moment of isolation. He isolated me to pretty much learn. No, you're going to spend time with me. I went over there thinking I'm going to play pro ball, and he isolated me, said, no, you're going to learn about me. There's nobody here. I was like in this dorm by myself, and because everybody else left, and I'm studying his word, and then all of a sudden, my best friend picks me up from the airport, and we kind of, you know, he's kind of still in the best friend mode, like, what's up, bro? So how was Brazil? What was the new beaches like, right? He's in that mode. And I'm just like, I'm just in this posture. And he's looking at me like, dude, he literally said it. And he wouldn't say it if it wasn't true. He said, dude, you're like glowing, bro. Like, I was in this posture of humility. It was like Paul. I was like bent over, permanently bent over in embarrassment for who I was as a person in a humility. And he said it. And I was just, the mission kind of, my life just kind of, it kind of changed there. You know, it went from salvation to kind of taking me through this. And I'm grateful for how he took me through it. Because if it would have just learned, I might have kind of got a self-righteousness. Because I was already like arrogant and thought I was all that, right? So I might have learned the word and be like, yeah, you need to do this, this, and this. But God had to break me down, build me up, break me down, build all these different. He had to let me see how people were living out their faith. I'm like, man, these guys are really, I'm like, man, all of these ladies are truly, they're really virgins around here? I didn't know that virgins existed. You know, like all this, you know, I'm like, all this stuff is just like, and God is showing me, and he's showing me people, marriages coming together that are Christian marriages, and I'm just seeing all this stuff. And then the Brazil thing just kind of completely took it over the top. So that's kind of weird.
Amazing. That's amazing. That's an amazing story. Thank you for sharing that. So what prompted you to get into coaching?
You know what? As I shared, when I came back, my goal was to go play pro ball. And, you know, I was going to be an actor. There were so many things that I was going to do. And I'm going to be a millionaire by the time I'm 30, right? That's all of us. You know, we all said we're going to be millionaires at this time. So I have one class to finish coming back from Brazil and Australia to get my bachelor's. So I really went on this missions trip, leaving a class open to get my bachelor's. The college coach that was there, he said, hey, why don't you come back and why don't you help me coach, and I'll pay for the class and help you finish up. Hmm. You know, this is the time when I come back from Brazil, and I'm like, why am I in Brazil when I can go outside my door in LA and minister to the same kid, right? So I started a group, Save Through Hoops. I started doing the same thing, do clinics in LA, minister. And then I'm coaching at the Master's College now. And then all of a sudden, I find that all of the things that I'm passionate about, and I heard someone sharing about the calling on our lives, it involves the passion that we have. You know, God didn't call me to be a CEO and a billionaire, right? At least he didn't call me to do that right now. But, you know, he called me. I got a passion about competition. I have a passion about the locker room. I realized that I love the locker room. I love staying relevant. I don't like being in a suit and tie and ministering to corporate America. You know, I'm uncomfortable. I don't like that environment. Like, it's corny to me. You know, I like the environment where there's still a level of, you know, I can wear a sweatsuit. I like that environment. I'm passionate about being practical, being normal. And I think God put me in a place where I started to see, I love the coaching side. I'm looking at the coach that coached me, who I liked, but that's the same guy who told me I wasn't good enough and I had to work my way up, you know, and get in good graces with him. I started to understand and see the psychological and all the strategies that got us to perform well because we were successful. And I'm like, wow, that's why he did that. He would literally come in the office And I'm like, this guy is a normal guy. Like, he's a normal person. But, you know, as the head coach and you're the player, they don't seem normal. All head coaches seem weird. And I'm like, this dude is a normal dude. And it was like, I kind of want to be like that. Like, he's a normal guy, but he's got all these, he's got a disposition that allows him to keep a, you know, keep a level of excellence on the basketball court. But he's a normal guy outside of it. And none of the players even know that. Like, I didn't know it until I started working with him. Then he showed me that you can be a believer and coach. Then he showed how to win. And John Wooden was his mentor. He actually worked with Athletes in Action. His name was Bill Oates. He actually passed last. As a matter of fact, he may have passed of COVID. It was in January 2020. He ended up on a respirator. He was about close to 70, or maybe he was over 70. He was on a respirator and he passed, and they didn't know what was wrong. Nobody knew until March 2020. But anyway, he was a coach of Athletes in Action in the 70s. They represented the United States in the World Games for basketball. So the U.S. didn't represent. At the time, Athletes in Action was the best amateur team in America. They represented the United States. John Wooden had retired. He was the color commentator. So he traveled with that team. Him and Bill Oates became close friends. So John Wooden used to come to our practices all the time.
Wow.
And Bill Oates, who I coached with at the Masters University and I played for, right? So he's there coming to our stuff. Bill Oates used to go have breakfast with him like every week. And I used to say, can you take me? I used to get maybe once a year, like once or twice. So I got a chance to get that and get some wisdom and learned a lot about winning. So it was truly amazing. Though that's kind of some of the inspiration. And I got a chance to be around that. My mentor, he won almost 1,000 games, and I got to see how to have success. And so I grew a passion for it. I'm still competitive. I still felt like I hadn't finished playing or finished competing. I loved the locker room. And then I saw I can minister doing it.
Yeah. Wow. So Bill Oates and John Wooden, two great mentors. And what I'm sensing from you is that they were probably your greatest influences in your coaching career. Obviously, a lot of people across the world, regardless of whether you're a basketball fan or not, know John Wooden because of the books, because of his philosophies, because of the quotes that are now plastered all over, you know, walls and locker rooms and what have you. Is there one maybe moment with John Wooden or a lesson that he taught you that really sticks out in your mind when you think of your time with him?
Yeah, so I had a chance to meet him three times, and it was three breakfasts, you know. So two breakfasts and one dinner. So, you know, and we'll sit there and, you know, my mentor, he initially was guarded, you know, like, no, this is my friend, you know, but he allowed us to ask a few questions. I asked one question, just give me one thought. I think it was the first time we met. He said, for every high, there is a low. He said, never get too high and never get too low. And it may have come from somewhere else or whatever, but when he mentioned that to me, that kind of stayed with me. And it always stays with me, you know, in the sense that you never deserve all the praise that you're getting, and then you never deserve all the criticism that you get as well. So to kind of stay in the middle, and just the same, don't get too big on all the great successes and all that, and don't get too down on all of the failures, to stay right there and to just stay in the moment. And so I think that's resonated with me, and that's something that I've always taken. Just like with our guys, I'll never celebrate the guys too much so that they go beyond and they lose themselves. And just the same, I'll never let the guys get too low. I always pick them up and love on them, you know. But at the same time, I'm not going to give you credit because you made a good jump stop and you made a jumper. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to celebrate you for that. That's something that you should do. Just as soon as I'm not going to celebrate you for how poorly you may have performed. It's like, no, that's just one day. And so that's something that I've taken that has helped me. And I saw that with my mentor. I saw him use that advice And he just systematically went through the days. And I would wonder, why isn't he criticizing this? Or why isn't he celebrating that? He would just systematically go and keep us on that same path and not let anything distract us. And I think that's kind of what resonated with me.
Coach, we only got a few minutes left. I got two quick questions for you. Number one, are we going to see ELAC Last Chance U season two?
They talked about it. But, man, Netflix, they are so secretive. They don't tell us anything until, like, the last minute, you know. So it's up to their approval. I'm sure Last Chance U, that team, that production team, they're constantly looking for other, you know, ways to continue to build that brand. So I know they're reaching out to other people for whatever other projects they're doing. They may decide to go do something else. They haven't announced it, but I have no idea.
If it was up to me, if it was up to me, I'd say we got to have at least one more season. We got to have at least one more season.
Yeah.
You said something at the beginning, and I want to close with this. You said that, you know, you've kind of been saddened almost by all the praise and all the, you know, pats on the back saying good job, because you feel like the way you coach and the way you minister to these kids should be more common than it is. What would be your piece of advice to a young guy coming up like John Mosley back in his 20s who wants to coach and impact kids?
Well, I would say number one is to make sure that you that you're mentored by someone that's respected, someone that has success. I think it's important to get under good mentorship to learn how to have success, learn how to win, and learn how to – I think that's important, even if it comes at a great sacrifice. And then number two, never walk through the door and try to coach. I think the first thing you got to do is walk through the door, and you got to love. You got to love your relationships and love. If you want those guys to listen to you, you got to love on them. You got to build relationships with them and know what's going on in their lives so that they know that you share the burden with them, so that they feel like, okay, he really loves me and he really has a vested interest in me. So I'll go ahead and at least buy into what he's saying or trust what he's saying. So I think you got to have that relationship, get under good mentorship, man, and then build those relationships with the players by loving them.
I love that. Coach, thank you so much for your time. I really enjoyed it. I could talk to you for hours about your philosophy, and your energy is just so infectious. And it definitely spilled over from the show onto this podcast. So thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Coach.